Okay, so welcome back. So Carrie's done a couple talks, or I guess three talks on resolve, so I'll add my words to it. I guess it was two talks because we did the forgiveness last week or last Monday. So resolve is one of those words that sometimes just register how does the English language conditioning land with me? Kind of after that, you know, sense of toughening up and perseverance no matter what, at what cost comes to mind. So resolve is one of those words. I think it's helpful to kind of step back a little bit, see how we might be distorting it a little bit through our conditioning. Even if you look at the suttas, there's this little piece from the middle length discourses, number 70. Through though skin, sinews, and bones wither away, though flesh and body of blood of my body dry up, I shall not give up my efforts till I have attained whatever is attainable by heroic perseverance, energy, and endeavor. Right, so that's one version of this sense of resolve. And if you think about the Buddha's own journeys, that he went through these different pathways when he decided, had this resolve to awaken, to see, I want to understand what is beyond this conditioned life of old age, of sickness and death. Is there something, some source of peace and happiness that's outside of conditions? And he first started by learning some deep concentration practices where he basically sheltered his mind from everything else except that sublime state. But he realized those two weren't quite what he was looking for because those were impermanent. Once he came out of that state, he would still be this human person, human being with all this suffering. Then he started to go into this really strong period of really almost punishing his body, working so hard, you know, just bearing down with his mind, bearing down with his concentration, even starving himself. All these different, this is kind of trendy back then, is to really kind of punish the body and kind of purify it in that way. But he realized that, okay, no one can do anything, work harder than I'm working right now. And I'm about to die from this effort. So then he realized, okay, I'm going to step back from this, come to a more easy way of being in the world, easy way of practicing. And that's one of the things I want to explore tonight is this, some of this distortion around resolve has to do with our sense of trying to get over ourselves, trying to become a better version of ourselves, trying to get to enlightenment. And we have to really balance that with our wisdom, with our understanding. Because this word resolve has a sense of determination, of effort, willpower to overcome, this commitment to get things done no matter what. It's certainly related to will and to effort and energy. So other elements we see in the Buddhist terms. But resolve is a thing that starts to change as our practice changes. As it starts to transform us, that very quality of resolve also starts to change. And it shows up how our practice changes over time. So resolve versus willpower. So for my own practice early on, I started practicing back in like 1996. And I think my first retreat was 1997. And I went on a retreat and I wanted to really practice sincerely. I had a deep commitment, a deep resolve. And my kind of simple focus was, okay, I'm going to sit still and in the seated position on the floor and just relax with whatever's arising, no matter what, right? So I had a lot of resolve, but my body wasn't so up to that task. There's just a lot of pain and discomfort that I would sit through because I had a lot of resolve or will or stoic or whatever it might be, trying to kind of ignore that or try to relax with it. I was really trying to use the practice in order to get over my physical body, the limitations. But as I've shared in the past, that sometimes at one moment I would hear that the bell was calling us back from a walking period, and I noticed that fear would arise with that sound. And I realized I was conditioning fear with the meditation. And I realized there needed to be some course correction. So there's a realization that that willpower, that sense of resolve, there's something about it that was counterproductive. It was actually going against my aim of practice. So resolve has one of the common distortions that we'll explore, especially this next week, is that trying to get over ourselves, trying to get to be a better version of ourselves. Like, you know, I want to be like the Buddha, you know, the Kuan Yin. I want to be like that. I want to be like whatever projection I put on. And my own humanness, my own physical pain, my emotional pain, my mental pain, I want to somehow jump through that and avoid that. We're trying to attain something, can be the feeling in some of the distortions of resolve. I have to get someplace. I have to get someplace where I'm not. And the practice has this way of teaching us, often through failure, just like how I was listening to that sound of the bell and realizing there was fear arising because I was punishing my body by trying to fit my body into something that wasn't so comfortable, wasn't so healthy really. And learning, okay, maybe it's better to just mindfully shift the leg when the tension and pain gets too much. And we start to realize the practice isn't so much about attaining anything or adding anything to us. It's actually much more of a process of subtraction, of letting go of these different layers of greed, of hatred, of delusion. They start to fall off us. They start to slough off us. And so this is a different way of resolve showing up, because it's a different resolve, like I want to get someplace. I want to be a better person. I want to be more spiritual, more holy, more enlightened, versus I want to return to what I actually am. I'm going to come back into this quality of heart, which is naturally kind, naturally interconnected. Now, resolve seems like when you hear this word, okay, this resolve, I'm resolving to do this, it seems like it should start at the beginning of something, the beginning of a path. We bring all our commitment, our energy to apply to it, our willpower to see us through this journey, you know, to improve myself or to obtain something. Yet if you look at the paramis, these 10 perfections, resolve is actually number 8, right? It's not number 1. It's number 8. That's a little curious when you think about that. You know, why not have the resolve right at the up front? Okay, I'm going to resolve to really power through this and get enlightened or get awakened and or just become a nicer person, whatever it might be. And if you look at it from that perspective, each of these paramis, we can look at it individually as one that we really focus on. We can also see how they can be mutually supportive. I think that's a better way to look at it, because it's not like we can just perfect one of the paramis and then we're all done. We have to have this well-rounded quality, kind of all of these different elements, and they each really support and inform the other ones. So let's go through these paramis for a little bit and just how they support this one parami of resolve, particularly around this lens of willpower, of kind of this ego-drivenness that often we come into practice, not even realizing it's there. Now, ego-driven, or that sense of self, sometimes it shows up as I want to become, you know, a big me, and, you know, everyone look at me. But just as equally can be that sense of self-diminishment. I want to become, you know, less than. I'm kind of just self-low, self-esteem. All those qualities can also be just as ego-driven. So generosity and how it relates to resolve. So when we start to open to generosity, there's this acknowledgement that I'm not the only person in the room. I'm not the only person on the planet. That I actually have things I can share. That I actually rely on other people being generous to me. So it starts to move us from this kind of self-centered, isolated perspective into one of interconnection, of interrelationship, of this acknowledgement and actions from that of interconnection. Here, this is something I want to give you. Thank you. I appreciate this offer. So you can see that meeting, that interconnection. And so resolve, how it fits in with generosity, is that quality of accepting that interconnection, is starting to let go of that self-centered perspective. Now, ethics or morality or virtue, different ways we can define the second parami. So this is in some ways very similar to generosity, is that we're learning how that our actions do cause harm, our impact of our actions, and really seeing that in a clear way, connecting those dots of our intentions to our actions and the impact of those actions. Again, this is acknowledging that we are interconnected, that I don't act in isolation. You know, we can't just act in a way that's kind of anonymously causing harm. It has impact that spreads out. So we start to connect with this sense of kindness, of non-harm in a very deep way. That resolve is very, very powerful. And we explored that quite a bit when we had that month. As you can see, the impulse to act unkindly, the impulse to do something that's unethical. And there's a resolve of following what's aligned with your heart. Resolve with connecting with what's actually interconnection, with kindness. And renunciation. This really works with greed. So you can see the three distortions of greed, hatred, and delusion. So we start to work with renunciation. This is the letting go of what is no longer helpful, which is no longer serving us in our life. Letting go of things which aren't aligned with the path. Going back to that sense of subtraction as a quality of resolve versus addition. Now, wisdom. Wisdom is probably one of the biggest influences on resolve, because we often start with practice and we have basically a misperception of how things actually are, misperception of who we are in relationship to others, into the world. And that misperception really comes down or boils down to that separate sense of self, that's quality of isolation, and then believing in that sense of me. And this is very subtle. You know, we sometimes, you know, talk about it, but when you really start to explore the ramifications of it, you realize that this is the basic way that I perceive the world. It's filtered through this self-identity, that I'm having this experience. I'm speaking right now. I'm hearing this right now. I'm the one who's sitting. I'm the one who's having this experience. So truthfulness, you know, there's the expression of what's true and what's not true. There's also this deeper alignment to this deeper dharmic truth. And once we start to get a sense of that, and what I mean by that is like a real direct seeing of that, we start to see that this illusion of self is just that. It's just something that I've believed in. And it falls away. Now, this is something that sometimes feels very kind of esoteric, or it's hard to attain. But I think if you start to learn to look more closely, you see that there's moments where you actually, even in the normal day, that the sense of self isn't so strong, isn't so active, right? Now, if you kind of extrapolate that to time moments when you're really engaged, when you're really, okay, this is who and what I am. I'm really angry right now. I'm really scared right now. I really have this strong opinion about what should happen in this situation, in this world, in my life. You know, that sense of when we get triggered by someone else, that sense of otherness is really strong. I really know who I am. You can feel that distance. You can also step back and notice the suffering that's there. You can notice that it's almost, in some ways, there's no way out of that suffering. We can kind of fine-tune it. We can make it less. We can become more functional in our lives. But there's this fundamental suffering that continues. And that's what the Buddha was really focused on. What's that suffering of the self that there's a potential for releasing? And so truthfulness, or lying with truth more and more, we start to question this conviction of self. And we start to notice those times when we're actually just sitting and abiding in the moment. We're simply connecting with something like a sound, feeling a breath. Or maybe we're just connecting with another person, a friend, not really asking them to be anything other than they are. You're just listening without preconceptions, without prejudice, with an openness. Notice how this sense of self is a lot less defined, a lot less established. Right? And at the same time, you're more connected. You're more in relationship to this other person or to life. Right? So see the jump from really strong sense of self to that really quiet sense of self. And there's even a deeper jump when that sense of self falls away, when there's not that perspective of separation, that you actually look to see something that's always been here. Everything's filtered through that sense of I, me, and mine. It's just not there anymore. Right? So I'm kind of going into this a little bit at depth here because this really changes our resolution, the sense of resolve. Right? Because if that sense of self is still there, the resolve is always going to be a little bit filtered through it. Okay, because the sense of self is only knows how to make itself better, knows how to judge itself, it knows how to feel bad about itself, feel good about itself. It knows how to interpret everything through its perspective. Right? So resolution or sense of resolve, I should say, is going to be affected by that. When you start to see that self as being not so convincing, then the sense of self, sense of being resolved really changes. It's really that sense of subtraction, that sense of letting go. And then the next parami of patience. The next parami of patience. This is such an interesting juxtaposition with resolve, because resolve has like that commitment, okay, I'm going to be here no matter what. But I also can sometimes have a little bit of, let's hurry up and get done with it, right? Let's hurry up and get through this. Okay, I'm going to storm the gates. I'm going to do whatever I have to do. You know, I'm going to be a heroic, you know, applying of my energy and my skill and my will. And then there's this patience thing. What? How does that relate? Okay, so patience comes back. It's kind of like a check. It's like a litmus test. How much will-driven are you right now? Because if you're really will-driven, there's going to be that, I got to get this next moment of awakening, this next moment of spirituality is going to be better than this moment of being upset at my spouse or my partner. Right? But patience kind of goes into this timeless quality. It doesn't, there's time falls out of the equation. And so resolve has a very different expression from that perspective. So if I could sit here with this situation, this experience, as long as it needs. It's not asking it to move beyond its natural timing. This is interesting with impermanence, right? Because we often look at impermanence as things coming and going, and we resist the fact that it's coming and going. But sometimes we want things to kind of hurry up and come and go, right? let's get on with the next thing. So there's this sense of trust, this sense of waiting for things to arise at their own natural expression. And that's a really beautiful thing to do, to start to relate to life that way. I mean, there's times we have to really get in there and take hold of the steering wheel and drive the bus. And other times there's just simply allowing it to come in its own timing. And this is part of the challenges, but also beauty of integrating our life and our spiritual practice. We start to learn, when do we let go? When do we come forth? You know, when do we have that sense of patience? When do I bring my energy forth? Like the serenity prayer, you know, so familiar for those in recovery, that, you know, grant me the strength to know, what's the first one? This courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom know the difference. Yeah, so there's that wisdom quality of discernment, of knowing, when can I change it, when can I not? Can I have the courage to come forth? Can I have the serenity to accept what I cannot change?
So it's not serenity now.
It's not serenity now? It's a joke. So patience, truthfulness, and then we come to resolution, resolve. And the next two primaries, the last two, are loving kindness and also equanimity. I can see how these also start to change resolve, because sometimes resolve is like, okay, I want everyone to get out of my way because I'm going this way. I'm trying to get to this path. You know, hurry up, I want to get to the meditation hall first. Right? So loving kindness is again that connection, that sense of warm heartedness, that sense of inner relationship. And then equanimity, this balance. Because resolve has this, again, this is almost a opposite quality, because resolve is like, I want to resolve to get someplace. I want to do something. I want to commit to this path. I want to open to the depth. This first line I read. Though skin, sinews, and bones wither away, though flesh and blood of my body dry up, I shall not give up my efforts until I have attained whatever is attainable by heroic perseverance, energy, and endeavor. Right? Then you drop equanimity into that. Okay, so equanimity is just this balance of attention. It's not a sense of distance or disconnection or disassociation. It's about being equally near all things. Awakening or not awakening, it's held in a balanced place. And this is the paradox of that, because true equanimity is really coming from this, really that release of separation, that release of who is the person who's separate from this experience. So this 10 paramis all work together. So if you feel like you're struggling with the paramis, try to bring these other ones into it and form it. Bring it to help to counterbalance it, to help you see how you might be distorting one of these paramis. Because paramis means perfections, right? So already we're kind of in this, I want to be a perfect version of myself. It's easy to kind of go down that pathway. So bring all the paramis along as you explore them. So how does resolve show up in our practice and our life? I'm just going to spend the last bit of the talk exploring how it shows up in different elements. So resolve we use every time we meditate, right? There's a resolve to meditate because there's so many other choices you could do at any given point, right? To actually decide to sit, have a regular practice, to come to this meeting, to come to your other Sangha meetings. There's a certain intentionality and resolve that has to kick in, that has to come forth with that. There's a resolve while we're sitting. You know, how many of us chose to let go of maybe a thought or a fantasy in this last meditation? How many people, maybe you're falling asleep a little bit. Okay, I bring a little bit more energy. Maybe my body was really restless. How do I bring a quality of calmness to that? So to have an ongoing daily practice, you have to have some quality of resolve. That I'm going to sit, I'm going to practice. And this is resolve and doubt are interesting to bring together too. There's a time in my practice where I was really questioning whether I should keep meditating. It's like, is this really helping me? Is it really worth all its effort, all its time, all its work? And I hadn't been able to practice very much, or I had chosen not to practice much, is probably more honest. I said, okay, well, I'm going to first practice regularly so I can give it an honest test to actually see. So I said, okay, I'm going to give my day a month. I'm going to practice every day. And then in the month, make a choice. Is this really a beneficial practice or not? Hopefully you can guess which way I went on that one. In a resolve, I think in isolation, it's often more challenging to practice solo. So to realize that, okay, there's this room of everyone practicing together that helps to bolster you. Those of you who have been on residential retreats, you start to really feel that. You come into the hall, there's all these people practicing. It encourages you to come back. It's like, oh, I don't want to really practice again. Okay, there's the bell. I'm just going to go ahead. I'm just going to keep on going. So our daily practice. And then also in our daily life, you know, how does resolve show up here? Right? This is this beautiful integration of our growing compassion and wisdom. The connection of our actions, having our actions start to flow more and more from that place of kindness, that place of wisdom. Noticing when we contract our heart. Noticing when we can choose and pause with that and actually have a different way of being with the other person. Once you start to see that in your life, practice becomes much easier to do because you realize, well, this is actually helping me be a better person. It's helping me navigate this very tumultuous, this very difficult world that I live in, all the different relationships. You start to really appreciate that. And if you were someone who doesn't meditate, they might actually encourage you to meditate because you're more kind, you're more patient. You actually help the relationship deepen and grow. And the more we see that change, the more the resolve becomes stronger. Now, there's resolve also when life is difficult, when things are not going so well. The resolve to choose to act in a different way, choose to be kind, to be as wise as we can, to be as skillful as we can. There's the resolve that comes from, okay, I want to practice in this time. I know many of us, we've learned this. You know, we practice with, okay, it's kind of nice. It's a nice thing to do. And then our life kind of falls apart. And then we practice, from the practice actually really helps me find some centeredness, some sense of ground, whether it's a diagnosis, whether it's a relationship that's ending, a difficult situation in our life. I learned this around metta myself once. Just to be honest, for years, I didn't really connect with the metta practice. I just felt it was a little bit like I was just doing these kind of rote, dry phrases. And I didn't really feel much in connection with that practice. And then came a time when my wife had an emergency and we had to go to the ER. And it was a situation where there was a lot of unknowns about what direction would go. You know, would she recover or not? And we had a young child at that time. And I wanted to practice in that in the ER, you know, the late hours as it often is. And as I tried to meditate, I was surprised to notice that my meditation wasn't available for me. I would try to connect with my body and my breath, and I felt like I was just dropping like water on a hot skillet. It just would not penetrate at all. It wouldn't land because intensity and the fatigue and all these things were too much for the mindfulness to come forth. And then I thought, well, maybe I should try metta. I've heard it's good for these kind of things. And I was surprised to see that actually allowed me to connect. May you be safe. May you be protected. May you be happy. Offering it to my wife, offering it to the caregivers and the staff and all the different people I could think of, to myself. And in that moment, I realized, okay, this practice, the sense of resolve that came forth is out of desperation, really. I need something here. I need some kind of lifeline. Then the practice was there for me. Thomas Merton said that prayer and love are learned in the hour when prayer becomes impossible and the heart has turned to stone. Heart has turned to stone. And so learning how life is going to give that to us, right? There's going to be situations, circumstances in the big world, in the country, within our personal lives, within this personal body. Practice with those. You know, spend time sitting. You're doing an intro class right now, and we start in 2 weeks, we start to open to using emotions as another object of attention. And once you start to learn, when you're feeling a lot of emotion, to sit down and practice a little bit, it's so skillful. It allows you to feel the emotion as a body sensation instead of this thought that just keeps driving and making you lost in worry. So the resolve when life is difficult. What about resolve for practicing when things are boring? Right? When the breath just is just so boring, there's nothing happening, you know, it's just like I can't connect with it or I'm falling asleep. That's a different type of resolve, right? How can I bring that forth, that willingness to meet even life is boring, is uninteresting, to still meet it with as much care as I can. So part of this is this wisdom factor coming in, that we realize that we might have this resolve, we have a lot of doubt in that moment. Maybe this isn't so right, the right thing to do because it's boring. And the wisdom allows us to sit through that, to meet it. You know, thinking about the night of the Buddha's awakening when he had all the different hindrances coming at him. I mean, the willingness to stand, to sit, to keep practicing, to see through that. What about resolve when just life is really kind of fun and pleasurable, when life is so entrancing and enjoyable? It just feels so good. Sometimes it's hard to practice in those times, right? It's like, you know, it's like my mind, I really want to just stay in this really entertaining daydream. You know, this fantasy is really, this is much better than life, right? You know, it's like you wake up from a really nice dream. It's like, oh, I want to go back to that fantasy world. You know, and so that's another form of resolve, is trying to see the limitations. So this practice, sometimes you get a sense it's about getting rid of pleasure or never having pleasure. It's not that at all. It's really about learning not to be trapped in pleasure, to be attached to pleasure. Because has anyone found that pleasure, you can only have, figure out a way to just have pleasure in your life? Never any disappointments, just pleasant sensations, pleasant sounds. You know, this is the archetype of the Buddha when he was a prince. He had life made. He had just incredible sense pleasure and comfort. And yet he saw this person who was sick, someone who was dying and dead, who was getting older and aged. And he was shocked to realize this too will happen to me. This too will happen to me. So that brought forth a different quality of resolve. So it's not about denying this pleasure. It's one of the great benefits of being lay practitioners, is that we don't have to renounce things. We can still enjoy, you know, all this whole array of being human. And we also have to have that quality of resolve. When does this start to become something that's it's counterproductive? You know, spending so much energy to trying to get more and more, to get more pleasure, more experiences. Where's that wisdom? Where's that, the heavenly messengers that brought the Buddha into the path? Can we bring that forth? So that's one of the challenges of when things are pleasant, when things are going so well. How can we still bring practice to bear? And the final one I want to touch on, and this is the resolve of this letting go, this deepest quality of letting go. This is a resolve to release that sense of self. And this is, from the sense of self perspective, this is like going into what's unknown. Not only unknown, it's like you're undefined. You don't know who and what you are. So that's a different quality of resolve. And this is the practice. The practice is kind of hinting at this all the time, just the way we instruct you in meditation. Like, we don't say, okay, sit down and tell the mind to shut up and make sure you judge anything except the breath and make sure you don't control the breath, but try to relax while you do all that. You know, if you're not relaxing, try harder to relax, right? We don't use those kind of words. You say, allow the moment to be how it is. Because we know that attitude starts to disengage the gears of the sense of self. The sense of self loves to judge and control and fix, right? It's very functional in our lives. But when it becomes an unconscious habit, that's where the detriment happens. That's where the suffering happens. This is the big leap of faith. Sometimes I think our kind of our Theravadan languaging doesn't capture this as well as some other traditions. Particularly sometimes when we get into this deeper resolve of letting go, because we have to counterbalance this with the idea that the sense of self, the ego, can just continue across that threshold. That kind of like, I'll be still me, but I'll be this really polished, shiny, glowing kind of me, right? There's that perhaps that perspective. Or maybe I can jump over this personal pain in a way that I don't have to feel it. I don't have to acknowledge it. I can just jump right into awakening. So that has to be balanced with also this kind of deep yearning, this deep heart drawing to let go. And so I find that sometimes the more mystical traditions speak to this in a very compelling way. So I'm going to share this one from Meister Eckhart. So Meister Eckhart was a Christian mystic, I think from the 600s. So he does use the word God. He's really focused on that. I know that can be a charged word. The way I tend to use God is really synonymous with the deepest aspects of the Dharma. This quality of interconnection, of true nature. So hopefully that's not completely insulting to those out there, but that's how I tend to hold it. So Meister Eckhart said that one should love God mindlessly, meaning that your soul ought to be without mind or mental activities or images or representations. Bear your soul of all mind and stay there without mind. Let your own being you sink away and melt into God's being God. In this way, your you and God's her will become a completely one my. And you will come to know her changeless existence and her nameless nothingness. So what's the resolve? How does resolve show up there? It's really a resolve of surrender, a resolve of letting go in a profound and deep way. And so this is the whole spectrum of resolve, right? The resolve of, okay, I don't really want to practice right now. I'd rather watch that Netflix, that last episode in that season. Okay, but I'm going to practice. The resolve of practicing. That's my using my will to keep practicing. The resolve of letting go of this thought and coming back to this present moment's experience. The resolve of how it integrates in our life. Can I choose to actually take time to connect, take time to be kind, take time to not act in a harsh way, in an unkind way, in a harmful way? Can I release that and notice it? Can I find this balance of resolve between this pleasure and pain, this joy and sorrow of our lives? And can I find that resolve to let myself let go, to let go into that stillness, that quality that Meister Eckhart is speaking of, and come to know her changeless existence and her nameless nothingness? All right, if we can sit quietly for a couple moments, and then we'll open to any questions and talk about the homework. All right, thank you for your kind attention. Let's just say a few words about the practice for this week. So this homework is a chance for you to take the talk and the topic into your life. How do I actually show up in my life? How can I integrate the way I am in the world with this topic of resolve? So what distortions of resolve what distortions of resolve do you tend toward? Okay, so just notice it. So it's not about judging it, but actually being aware of those patterns. Right? Do I tend to really go into that will, that sense that I got to get someplace? Am I trying to get over myself or create a better sense of me? And then how do the other paramis come in and start to support that, start to rebalance that, start to inform that? Just as we went through in the talk, do that whole process for yourself. Okay, so I'm feeling that's resolve, like, okay, I really have got to get to a certain place in my practice. I've been practicing for 5-10 years, I need to be at this point, I need to get these kind of things. He can feel the edge to it. He can feel the suffering with that. Right? So where does patience come in? Where does that sense of truthfulness come in? How can we have resolve and yet let go at the same time? This is the biggest paradox. How can we still have this intention of going somewhere and yet be letting go deeply as we walk that path? All right, so we have a space for any questions or sharing you might have. Let's see. Okay, that was just me. So either online, if you have a question or want to ask something or share something online, just raise your virtual hand and I'll call on you. And here in the room, you can raise your physical hand and we can bring a mic over. Looks like everyone's resolved not to say anything. Oh, someone, let's see. Did I see? Okay, so yeah, we'll go with Molly. And it's, oh, they were raising their physical hand?
Yeah, they're raising their physical hand.
Okay.
You want to start with here?
Yeah, let's go with Molly first, and then we'll go online.
So when you were just talking the last couple of minutes, I think I noticed a difference between my resolve when other people have expectations of me. I've made promises, I've made commitments. Mm-hmm. Whereas if it's just me, my own personal commitment or goal, it feels different than when I have somebody else out there, like proverbially pointing at me like,
right,
you made this commitment, you promised. So that resolve, it just feels different than if it's just me.
Yeah, I think that's a nice distinction, is that, you know, external resolve or external motivation versus that internal motivation. Because it's that external stuff, like we may have made a commitment or we have this agreement or we don't want to let someone down or all those kind of qualities. It does feel very different than if no one ever knew that you did it or didn't do it. I think that's a nice test for resolve is, you know, how do you behave when no one's watching? When no one is going to ever know? Like, do you meditate or not meditate? Did you choose to think this way or not think that way? I think that's probably a truer expression of resolve, because yeah, the external piece gets kind of really confusing, or sometimes we have these commitments or we don't want to let people down, and then there's all our, you know, our neuroses and all those things that come in too with that. But there's that internal resolve, like, okay, if no one's watching me, how would I act? And ideally those start to merge, right? There starts to be this, okay, doesn't, you know, I listen to feedback, but my inner clarity, my inner alignment, I know which way I'm going. I know what's true for me. So yeah, that's I like that. It's a nice way of exploring that. To start to kind of flesh that out, since, you know, you notice that while you're listening in your life, notice when your resolve is really kind of forced by other people. If those people suddenly disappeared, would that commitment still be there? Right? And then what's kind of without that, without any external feedback or motivation or coercion, can there just simply be, you know, what does that feel like? And start to see, maybe those can start to become, the distance can start to come back more and more. Yeah, that's a good, nice observation. Now, does someone raise their physical hand online? Okay, go ahead, Audrey. So do you have permission to unmute?
Sure. Would you care to
hear? Oh, now I can. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Just a quick question on the quote, one of the quotes you mentioned on prayer and love. Could you repeat that, or who was it? How did it go?
Yes, that was Thomas Merton.
Oh, okay.
Let me grab it. Prayer and love are learned in the hour when prayer becomes impossible and the heart has turned to stone.
Okay, yeah. All so right, thank you.
Substitute meditation for that, or this
right.
Sense of connection. It's like we really learn that when things feels like it's impossible to open my heart. It often teaches us this much deeper way of opening.
Yeah. I related. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Audrey. All right, what else is out there?
Hi. I think I'm just having trouble reconciling. I think a lot of times when I feel resolve, I'm not sure if this is working well, but when I feel resolve, there's a strong sense of self in a way.
Yes.
And I guess I'm just trying to reconcile that too with the mindlessness and the that Master Eckhart talked about, and,
right.
and the kind of dissolution of self at the same time, maybe, to be focused fully on others around me. I wasn't sure if you could explain that further.
Sure. Yeah. So that's, it is a paradox, and it kind of comes from a very different, probably perspective or paradigm might be a good way to say it. And it's kind of like our practice, we need to do both, have both elements. So there's a sense of resolve. Okay. I may be coming from my sense of will, or maybe it's the external commitment or the internal commitment, but there's definitely a sense of me choosing to do this. Right. And what I was trying to point to is that's part of this spectrum, that at some point that quality of resolve will no longer serve us. Our practice will start to have grown beyond that, or maybe the circumstance, you know, will come across it. So it's not going to be like an absolute, like, okay, you never have to bring that will back in. It's more of, let's see, how should I say it? Were you here when we did the ox herding pictures by chance? So the ox herding pictures are kind of this, it's a map, roadmap basically of the spiritual practice, right? And if you, those pictures depict different stages in the journey. So it's, you know, it's a linear perspective, but also we can kind of jump all over the place too. But there's a point when early on, we really have to use our will to just be able to practice. I mean, the mind's going all over the place. It wants to think about who knows what. Okay, feel this one breath. Okay, I got lost. Let's come back. There's a lot of resolve, willpower that's coming with that. That's beneficial. At some point, though, when the mind's naturally becoming more steady and more quiet, and you're starting to notice, okay, that pattern of mind just keeps on going. So I'll give you another example around it. Like I was... this last week, I got triggered by some interaction with someone. And my mind just kind of want to keep chewing on it, want to keep kind of gnawing on it like a dog chewing on a bone. But I could feel, okay, I can feel this. I can go into the body experience of it. I can let go of the story around it. But yet there's still the hurt around it. There's still the energy around it. And so in seeing that, okay, I've opened to it. I've explored it. I asked myself, okay, who is the person that is so angry or so upset right now? Who is the person? Where is that person? Okay, so this is calling forth this quality of investigation, this quality of wisdom. Let me really examine this sense of me who is so upset. And this is one of the kind of funny things about it, is it feels like it's so solid and always there. But if we actually start to look for it, it's not so apparent. And it's almost like, okay, that sense of self, when I look for it, it falls away. And then there's no longer the person who's angry. It doesn't make sense anymore. So that's that quality of resolution to investigate and question the sense of self. Yeah. And that's what Meister Eckhart was talking about, letting that basically dissolving that separation between you and, you know, the divine, or you and the spiritual, because that separation is inherent in that. Okay, I'm having this. Okay, I'm trying to get there. Let that go, and let's allow it to arise. Yeah. So it's kind of, we need both, right? So, does that help?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Do you still have a question, or yeah? Okay. And then we'll come to Kathy after this.
Yeah, I just wanted to share just like a personal experience of
the resolve leading to further resolve, like peeling an onion back, kind of. That's what it feels like. Like the initial driver for me with my practice was that I wanted to do it right and follow these steps. And it led me somewhere. And then I got to this like place where I kept trying to apply this strategy. And it felt like there was just all this tension, like, but I'm trying to do something that's relaxing me. It's like, so what do I do? And on this last retreat I was on, one of the instructors was like, let's just sit on the floor. Like, let's just lean back and just relax and not do anything. And it kind of blew my mind. Like, it felt like, oh, I can just literally do nothing and not try at all. And it felt like this new stage of resolve. Like, I'm just not going to try anymore. And that felt very freeing.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
And that's a great example of how resolve starts. You know, gets us onto the path, and it's very helpful at some point. But at some point, you can realize, okay, I'm really kind of heavy-handed, or I'm really trying to do this right. And then the effort becomes not so much of trying to do it right, but actually starting to release, to let go in a profound way. And the practice is full of those times. You know, you think that, okay, I really understand what it means to let go, and then there's a deeper understanding of what that means, and then there's a deeper one of that. And each one of those has a different quality of resolve that comes up. That's why it's like we have a limited perspective of what the journey is like when we start off. We have projections, we have ideas, we read some books, but we don't really know what it's like. But once we start to have openings and insights, or start to see things more clearly, that informs our resolve. It becomes more fine-tuned. It's another way of saying it. So you started to learn a different level of effort. What is really, what's wise effort? What does that really look like in this moment? And then sometimes, you know, it's like, okay, I don't even know where my body is. Okay, so I'm going to bring back that, okay, breathing in, breathing out. And that's going to be very helpful. Yeah, so thanks for sharing that. Thank you. Kathy, go ahead. Let's see if I can help you out here.
Mute. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank
you. I was really pulled into this a thing you said about resolving to give up the sense of self. And this is to do with it would be great any time, but I had a very strange experience today. I succumbed in my own mind. I succumbed in my own mind to a joke I made up about making fun of someone in politics. And, I thought it was so funny off and on all day. I was relatively captured by it. And, I backed off from Facebook to an email to finally just telling someone who doesn't share my views. And it's not a kind thing to do, but I mean, we can cope with this, but I am going to go apologize. But the thing about it is, I'm wondering about this resolving to give up the sense of self and negotiating with these captivating, to me, they get captivating, weeks that we have up to the election. I haven't been so taken with this until just lately. It seems more. So anything you can say about that would be helpful.
Well, first of all, noticing the capacity that actually was aware of all this. Right? So you're aware that you were kind of entranced by it. You're aware that you were kind of caught by it. There was just their capacity to be able to articulate it.
there's a part of the mind that was able to step back and observe that. Oh. Right? So what if the whole, and this is kind of a, you know, speaking like to the last questions around, you know, this shift of resolve, because often our resolve is kind of focused on the content of our mind. Election, this candidate, that candidate, this joke, this relationship. Okay, so the content is very compelling, right? And so we have a resolve of how can we navigate that as skillfully as we can. Now, if you step back and notice, okay, what's kind of aware of that? What's kind of all of that arising out of and falling back into? Right? You start to get start to reorient to that quality. Because whenever something arises in our minds, this is a great joke, I really like it, it's really funny. Okay, so we're relating to it in a kind of a sticky manner. It's kind of like we're really kind of engaged with it. And then it's interesting you had the whole praise and blame cycle there, because then you shared the joke to someone who didn't get the joke. And then you have the other side of it, right? Then the mind's also gripped. But yet there's something that's aware of all that, right? So if we can start to really orient to that part and actually open to that in a deep way and relax into it, have resolved to release into that, to actually, and more than releasing into it, start to kind of let go of that sense of separation that we perceive of it, that we actually see that as actually, that's what that we ourselves are arising out of. So that's a way of talking about this whole working with self and non-self without really saying those words, right? Self is really engaged when you're attached to the joke. Self is really engaged when you're embarrassed by sharing the joke and then insulting your friend or acquaintance. And yet, something's holding all of that. That's outside of that whole field. That's outside of that sense of self. And so the bottom line is, what's truly who you are? What's your essence? Are you the person who has the joke that you're engaged with, the person who's embarrassed by saying the joke? Or are you, your essence, something that's holding both of those? Mm-hmm. When you actually see that in a very deep way, then this whole thing about non-self, it's like, what was this self I believed in so much? I don't see it anywhere. So it's really a very profound perspective change, if that makes sense.
I'll try. I think since you say this, I'm realizing that it might come from anger or fear, you know. But that's again part of myself that, like you say, I can be aware of.
That's right. Yeah, and that's kind of this way of not trying to jump out of the sense of self before we really learn to really acknowledge and open to it. Okay, so let's see, underneath the joke, there's the fear, or there's the anger. Okay, so let me open to that. And maybe that was a way of trying to express that anger by sharing the joke with someone you probably realized wouldn't really like it. You know, it's a way of kind of bringing forth that anger and that outrage that you might be feeling. So can we open to that? Allow that to be known, to be felt. It's almost like you see, where's the charge? What am I not allowing this moment? Open to it, learn how to allow it to be here. Okay, what's the next charge that's not here? By doing that, then you get to a very quiet place.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you. So, all right. So meditation is this journey. And at the beginning, I assume it's the hardest. That's when you need the most, like, resolve. How does it evolve, like, over time? Do you need less and less, like, you kind of transform yourself, it becomes more and more natural, and it's almost a non-effort state of mind and behavior, or is it changing, or how does the resolve evolve over time?
Yeah, so how does the sense of resolve and the sense of effort change over time? You know, is it less and less effort, or is it like, is there, you need most of the effort at front, and then you're kind of coast or something, or is it
becomes
easier? It depends on a lot of factors, right? So one of the factors depends on what kind of technique or tradition you're practicing within. Some traditions, you kind of use effort pretty strongly for a long time until it almost, you kind of just realize, okay, this is just, I've been trying and trying and trying until it almost forces you to let go, forces you to release. Other styles, kind of more like what we do here at Seattle Insight, it's more aligned with kind of the natural mindfulness, that there's this kind of natural quality of being present. You know, and so, you know, generally, from that, given that kind of bias, you know, depending on which kind of technique you're practicing within, if you're practicing more of this natural mindfulness, yeah, it should become less and less effort, less and less, force of will. But at the same time, it becomes more accurate. Like you start to notice more clearly when you need to bring your effort in, you know, versus when it's already working, you don't have to really add much effort. Maybe the effort is more releasing, right? So how that looks is, you know, maybe things are going pretty smoothly in my life. You know, family is good, work's good. And then, you know, like let's say the election, I don't like how the election ended up or something. Well, it's interesting, equanimity is that month. Or like let's say you go visit your in-laws, or you know, you find a difficult person, and suddenly you find, okay, things are really hard and difficult. Okay, so that it's okay to bring back that force of will, like, okay, I'm gonna breathe 10 times before I send that email. I'm gonna really disengage from following my impulse, tend to myself, and then from there then see how the action arises. So it's kind of like it just depends on the life circumstance. And then sometimes you can also notice when you feel a little bit stagnant, like you feel like the practice has really been great and now it just kind of feels like it's kind of ho-hum, it doesn't have that same brightness. And that's a different quality of resolve. How can I bring a different way of relating to my practice to rekindle that energy? Maybe rekindle that deep yearning for opening or for awakening. Yeah, so it's kind of all over the place. Yeah. But the quality of resolve does change. We become more, there's a greater capacity that starts to arise. Like the founder of Aikido, Morihei Ueshiba, once someone's student said, like, I never see you lose your balance. And he said, actually, I lose my balance all the time. I just recover so quickly, you don't notice that. And that's part of, as our practice matures, we still got to get tripped up, but we course correct much quicker. When we start to practice, or before we practice, we get triggered and we're going to go down this road for, you know, days or weeks or months, but we start to course correct much quicker. All right, Gene, go ahead.
I just wanted to make a quick observation about resolve and gratitude. When I started this month, I didn't have any idea that there was gratitude for resolve. Mm. But I understand now that it's been a strong part of my practice, not necessarily in the forefront, but has been my staff, my cane, my support. And it shows up sometimes when I'm least likely to expect it. Mm. Like, let me give you an example. Like 4 o'clock on a Monday afternoon, I'm thinking, I'm not feeling it. I don't want to go to the sit tonight. I'm not there. Just doesn't speak to me. And a couple of hours later, the curiosity and the experiences that I've had in the past show up and they begin to say, there's possibility. Let me take my curiosity. Let me take my investigative nature and see what I can discover. And sometimes those have been the most powerful times in my whole process just to hear wisdom come from anyone in the group, from the teacher, from ways that I can connect the dots. So I was surprised to learn that, but I'm deeply grateful for what keeps me moving forward.
Yeah, beautiful.
With that resolve.
Beautiful. And that's part of the wisdom from your practice is you realize, okay, there is these times I don't feel like going, but yet I go. And then there's something that comes that was unexpected. There's a serendipity to it. There's a beauty to it that can orchestrate. And so there's this trust that starts to come forth also. Yeah, beautiful. Thanks for sharing that, Jane. All right. Anyone else? Yeah.
Hello. So we talked about resolve when it comes from yourself and when it comes from other people. But the Buddha's decision to like leave his life is kind of both playing at the same time. Because he has his obligations towards his family, and yet he also has this resolve to go beyond that. And so when is the right time to let go and let your position in life take you where it goes, and when is the time to find a different kind of resolve and actually do employ that sense of self to push through, mm-hmm. and decide something that is kind of counter to your environment.
Okay. Did everyone hear that question okay, or anyone have trouble? So the question is really around, resolve, when is it the time to be that quality of kind of will-driven resolve, really working with life circumstances, versus when is there a resolve of that deep letting go of releasing? And how do you know when those are? You know, unfortunately, I can't give you like go through this kind of logarithm or and then you can figure out what's the right choice. It's really by just trying something, just saying, okay, this feels like this, I feel like this is important for me to do. I want to, and then try it. And then listen to the feedback of life. I think that's probably the biggest thing. Is that we can, because any kind of resolve that we do, most of them eventually will become limiting. They no longer will be serving us. And at different times in the practice, those resolves are really, senses of resolve or that sense of commitment is so helpful and so important. But we don't really know it till after the fact. You know, so just notice that, okay? I feel like I really want to do choice A. I want to really engage with work or with family or friends or whatever it might be. Kind of bring a wholeheartedness to that. Notice, you know, pay attention. Notice, okay, maybe I get a little bit self-driven, and that's, okay, what does that feel like? Maybe that's really what I need to do. I really want to explore that fullness of self. Maybe there's a time when, okay, I really want to release that and notice the effects of that. So it's really, meditation, I often think of it as the whole Dharma practice. I tend to not try to give people suggestions like do this or this choice, but more empower them to be able to see for themselves, start to become more aware of kind of the consequences or the effects of different choices. I mean, I look at my own life. You know, I made a series of choices when I was 18 that ended me up here, you know, in this time and place and this situation in my life. I had no idea that that's where I was going when I made those choices. So it's part of it is things kind of unfolding at their own time. Yeah. All right. So we've come to the end of our time.